Hello, listeners. My name is Mark. If you have been enjoying the Listener Lore episodes, please come over to my separate podcast feed, Lorehammer Listener Lore. On this daily podcast channel, I will be reading one story a day and sharing your creative works with others and giving my feedback at the end. So, if you like grimdark 40k short stories, come join me at Lorehammer Listener Lore, the 40k podcast where you get to write the script.
Welcome back to Lorehammer. My name is Eric.
Eric, my man. I'm Mark.
Thank you, Mark. Today we're going to do a listener lore. It's been a minute.
Yeah, and the emails keep coming and we keep ignoring them.
But, yeah, we're only, 2 years backlogged.
Yeah, so it's not that big a deal.
We're going to get to you eventually. Before we do actually get into the episode itself, though, we do want to share a little bit of news just in case you haven't heard.
Yeah.
Lorehammer recently signed a partnership with Spotify, and as of October 21st, we will be exclusively available on their platform. But it is everything, all of our old feed, yeah. All our old episodes, all our new ones. You will be able to find them on Spotify, but only Spotify.
Yeah. So your task now for the next 3 weeks is you got to download one Spotify app, which is free.
Yeah,
it's only two clicks on the touchpad, so it's pretty easy. Even I managed to do it.
Which is a feat.
It's a feat. So download the Spotify app, follow Lorehammer on there, and you can stay up to date with everything that we're doing. But yeah, we're excited for everything that Spotify has to offer us, and we're excited to take Lorehammer to the next level. So
absolutely,
hope you guys come join us. Like we said, October 21st, we will only be on Spotify. So if you happened to all of us,
we're not going to field your emails saying that, hey, look, I can't find you on my thing. This is your warning. One and only.
One and only, I guess. Okay.
That's right.
The man has spoken.
But that being said, let's actually get into our episode today. And joining us, we have actually someone very special.
Yeah, I used to listen to his podcast all the time, and now I'm talking to the guy. So we got Paul Murphy from Forge the Narrative.
Hey guys, welcome, or thanks for having me.
See, he's a podcaster, he's trying to welcome us.
But, you know exactly how it goes.
Yeah. But we were on your show a couple months ago, and we decided to reach out and
now it's
your
turn to be on our show.
Yeah, yeah.
I appreciate it. It was a fun time then, and I'm having fun right now.
Oh, perfect.
So, you know what? I have always said Mark is nothing but a fun time. So
you're just lying to people now.
So Paul, this is your first time on not only our show, but also on this special type of episodes where people mail in their story that they've created by either through their armies or just writing short stories in the 40K universe itself. We read them unedited. So there can be some fun little run-on sentences.
Yeah. It's almost like people have never heard of spell check before. It blows my mind.
Look, they're typing on their phone. I get it.
Yeah. It's 3 a.m. You have a flash of inspiration from the Emperor himself. You have no choice. You just have to power through.
That's what editors are for.
Yeah, we're just the ideas and creative people. But anyway, let's actually get right into it. So I will read the very first one.
Yeah, show us how to read so then me and Paul can figure it out after that.
Yeah, you have all of however long it takes me to do this to figure it out. So we'll read it and then we'll kind of go through it. We can pick some of our favorite things and some of our things that we think that can be, changed.
Or expanded upon.
Like, right, yeah.
Yeah, sometimes you get that little bit of a nugget, and I just crave more of that nugget,
So, absolutely.
Let's get to it.
So the first story we're going to read today is from the author Redeemable Grace is their name.
Legal name.
Of course. Yeah. On the birth certificate. Mm-hmm. And it's titled The Twins of Forge World Jupiter. In the dark millennia since the Horus Heresy, the Imperium has suffered and struggled to survive. In these dark times, the great fleets of the Imperium sail forth to fight against the endless darkness. Mighty warships built with hate, forged with hate-forged steel, and zealous faith make for vessels worthy of the Imperial Navy. As much centers of worship as they are grand engines of battle, these ships bring the Emperor's wrath to his hated foes. Loader gangs made of criminals and scum of the Imperium load great macro cannons to the cadences of war hymns, while tech priests recite the holy canticles of aiming, firing, and loading. Platoons of Marines and occasionally Guardsmen, or even rarely Astartes, stand by to guard against borders and take the fight to the enemy's damned hulls. Following the battles of the Horus Heresy and subsequent conflicts, the Imperial Navy had need for more firepower, and the Astartes of the Second Founding needed more ships to send them to many campaigns. Amassing resources in the solar sector to further fortify Holy Terra's great defenses and build more ships to strike back against the horrors of the galaxy, the Navy has been preparing to rebuild its once vast ranks. At the dawn of the 33rd millennium, two ships of great size and power were commissioned. One, a Retribution-class battleship meant for an independent response fleet, and the other, a Mark I battle barge for his holy Astartes. While Mars, for the time, might not have been trustworthy, following the Civil War on Mars, there were still many yards to choose from. And for many years, the politics of shipyard commissions, contract betting, tests of faith and loyalty, and power grabs, it was eventually decided that the naval yards of Jupiter would serve as the birthplace of these titanic warships. And a birthplace it was indeed. Local tech priests and magi labored over the creation of these ships. Side by side, they shared docks. Starting as skeletal frames, the Admech priests poured their furnaces and processors into them. With a sort of parental affection, Archmagos Lyra Photoris watched over hundreds of years as these colossi grew from framework to true ship hulls. She listened to their developing machine spirits, imparting an almost maternal image upon them. But they were vast, young but enormous. With their massive size came massive spirits for their many countless functions, and Lyra soon learned that she could not commune long lest she be lost forever among their code. After many laborious centuries, the final touches were made, and the ships were ready to depart. And just in time, too. Strange warp storms were ravaging the sector. Horrors of the warp spilled forth and engaged with the vast defenses of the heart of the Imperium. Indeed, the Eye of Jupiter itself became one such storm, tendrils of cosmic nightmares surging out and reaching for the shipyards, hoping to claim as many prizes as it could. And on the turn of the year, from 830 M33 to 831 M33, the venerable souls of the dead came forth to fight back across the entire segmentum. Just as the corrupting tendrils reached the assembled ships, the light of those fallen for the Empire shone forth, vanishing the Empyrean terrors. Many who were there claimed to witness the souls of two warrior sisters standing side by side next to the battleships at the dock. Fighting nightmares made manifest, with ferocity never before seen in the world's great history. Since then, the Admech themselves addressed the ships as the twins, holy sisters of fury meant to clean the stars in the Omnissiah's name. When their crews were assigned and their magazines filled, the priests of Jupiter gathered to celebrate the birth of these giants. The battle barge was assigned to the Shadow Wolves. The Sons of Dorne would be best suited of protecting a new and prized vessel, while the Retribution was assigned to the 11th Solar Retribution Fleet. Backing out from their docks, long umbilicals used to jumpstart and power the vessels detached, and with that, cheers rang out from the gathered crowd. Their holy duty completed, they watched their children activate their warp engines for the first time and sail into the depths of the warp, to bring justice to the many souls of the Imperium. But the priests of Jupiter had odd beliefs. For one, no warship is ever named before her maiden voyage among fleets. The priests of Jupiter, believing that the Omnissiah names their warships in the forges of battle, must allow their children to earn their names. An annoyance to their crews and fleet commanders, and yet the decree of the Archmagos Dominus that this must be, or the ships would rebel, was upheld. For their first minor engagements, they were usually addressed as either the Retribution or the Battle Barge. It wasn't until the first major battle with orcs that they earned their holy titles. Year 888 M33. Orc warlord Squat Stompa leads Walk Stompede through several sectors in the Ultima Segmentum. Amassing a decent orc armada, a few battle groups are assembled to ward off the belligerent greenskins. Now was the time. With a couple fleets of the Imperial Navy, an Admech fleet from Chinchar, as well as Space Marines from the Ultramarines, Blood Angels, Reveliers, and Shadow Wolves, chapters all sending ships to the fight. The battle barge was decided to be the bait. Big and yet faster than it would first appear, it would lead the Greenskins into a trap, meaning the Retribution was paired up with the Arch Mechanicus as long-range support. The plan was to lure the orcs to a useless moon of no value, using the battle barge as a lure. The orcs, headed to Forge World Megair to gain more resources, would be goaded by the battle barge emerging from behind the moon of the world and rushing the orc fleet, all forward weapons firing. The plan was a success. The entire orc fleet turned to face the challenge, while the barge made a quick turn around, fleeing back to the moon, orcs in pursuit. The orcs raced past each other, often crashing and smashing each other in the process. Forming a sort of blotchy line, they were perfect prey for the awaiting fleet. Once the battle barge cleared the moon, the rest of the fleet, hiding right behind the moon, sprung into action, and the barge turned once again to face the orcs. The two long-range battleships, the Retribution and the Arch Mechanicus Starstride, began opening fire as fast as possible. Every battery thundering with spite and vengeance. Shot after shot ripped through the opening ranks of orc ships, and still they came. Pushing aside crippled wrecks and shattered rocks, they surged forward, not dissuaded by the fire, but exhilarated by it, rushing eagerly to fight. Then the Astartes forces rushed with the battle barge, and many strike cruisers and other space marine vessels cut through the orc fleet, splitting the force in two, then again and again, until the orcs were spread out into several more manageable clusters. Meanwhile, Imperial naval vessels blasted away until eventually the orcs were whittled down to the war boss's flagship. Big Smash, an eloquent name for a ship of such exquisite design, a lumpy mass of junk and rocks with engines and guns, was larger than all the ships that came before it. Larger than most Imperial warships, it served as Squat Stompa's flagship. Slamming into the battle barge while trying to charge the long-range pair, pushing back all engines blazing, the battle barge kept the massive hulk from approaching the battleships, and the Astartes on board were furious to see their brand new ship already damaged by such primitive beasts. They greeting the boarding hordes with blessed bolter fire. All the while, the Retribution slammed volley after volley into the orc ship. The guns, not given any time to cool or stop, quickly saw failures with the auto-loading mechanisms, and loaders were assembled to push the enormous rounds into the breaches of the guns, and many died in this process. Finally, down the last orc, Squat Stompa himself, bashed his way through the halls of the battle barge, and was finally slain by a champion of the Shadow Wolves. At the same time, magazines depleted, the Retribution fired her last salvo, sacred shells finally striking the most volatile insides of the large orc vessel. Blasting it to pieces, the battle barge sailed through the blast, damaged, but victorious nonetheless. And so it was with this great victory, the Archmagos Dominus of Jupiter and Archmagos Lyra Photoris came to the Forge World Megair to see the naming ceremonies. Much jubilation was had by the priests of Jupiter who followed, making the pilgrimage to see how their once beloved children had become full-grown war vessels. For their rage and courage in defending against a massive tide of orc boarding parties, the battle barge was named Endless Fury, so that the hatred of the Astartes be immortalized in steel. And the Retribution, for firing ceaselessly for the entire fight, was named Volley of Purity. Both now had been named, and with them would come many great achievements, earning fame and glory across the Imperium. And through logistic coincidence, strategic benefit, and outright luck at times, both ships would serve side by side for many more battles. Never apart for long, the twins would see many foes vanquished, many scars earned, and many worlds saved and burned together.
Ooh, very cool. Hey.
Yeah, that was pretty neat.
I always like 40K space battles. Like, I think Battlefleet Gothic is the one, like, specialist game I might do. If ever they do, like, a re-release of it. You know, just moving those ships around, you can just picture it. Oh, so good. I love it.
It's a pretty banging computer game, for what I understand as well.
Oh, you haven't tried it?
No, I've not. Oh,
me neither.
Me either. I know.
We're really great 40K people, aren't we?
Yeah, yeah.
I like pushing the figures around too. So sometimes the computer games, you know, it's like, where? How am I going to spend my 40K time? Like, let me go paint a model.
Yeah, I think that's the best. Oh, Eric, come on. You said, yeah, like you paint models. You son of a
I don't. It's true.
You can think about painting a model sometimes.
Yeah, I just like to look at it, you know? Look at it and pretend. Anyways, though, back to Redeemable Grace's story. It's not often you hear mention of politics in 40K, and I actually really liked that there was a focus in the story about the fact that they talked about who would build the ships. And because that's like a massive boost to whatever economy is.
100-year-long project.
Guaranteed work. And, you know, how much bribery and backstabbing and politicking and maneuvering alliances would have to be formed in order even just to get this contract.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever thought of it that way. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Like, the minutiae of 40K definitely escapes me a lot of times when I'm focused definitely on, you know, battles and individuals or massive armies. But there's entire aspects of that world that I like seeing these people, like, obviously, that's what Redeemable Grace was focused on. Like, the thought of how does it kind of holistically affect the people around it.
Yeah, I like too that like the tech priests call them like their children, like, and they're like nursing the machine spirits. I like all that kind of aspect of it too.
One of the things that I've always kind of touted about the Horus Heresy series is that the ships are just as much characters as some of the other named individuals. Or whatever, and this kind of captures that. The story captures that.
We've definitely had our differences on machine spirits and you know, whether or not they are true beings or whether they're nothing more than quirks in programming and code. But I definitely like that in this one, they even kind of manifest as these twins, you know, fighting, and almost there was a weird flare of energy and they were created and they were given physical form and an ability to fight, and that's a really neat take, I think, on these machine spirits.
I even like too just how you know, he doesn't name the ships until the very end. Is that it? I'm curious if that's standard 40K
they did say convention. It's specifically for Jupiter. But I also was wondering, you know, for not knowing a lot about what happens on Jupiter in the solar system, I wonder if that's an actual practice of the tech priests there.
I've heard of ships being renamed, or at least I think I remember ships being that were either a relic from some forgotten age or whatever, that were then named to something different. But I don't know if the original name has ever come up, like how it's happened. It's at least not in the stories that I've read.
There's a couple books that I've read that are very much focused on the aspect of naming and what it means to have like a true name, or even to change your name, what it looks like. You know, if your name is who you are, if you change your name, what does that mean about you as a person? And I kind of like that you can go through these moments of change where you actually fundamentally change who you are, and then it also, you represent it through changing your name as well. So it's kind of, I like that whole, like, making sure that one matches with the other.
Sure, yeah.
Can you imagine the stack of paperwork from the Imperium that would have to happen, though?
too much.
It's fine. There's people ready and willing to do that paperwork. It's fine.
If you had to, was there anything on the story, Mark, that you thought maybe could have been written better, or something that kind of jumped out as you as maybe not fitting?
Not really, no. I like it all. I liked it all, actually, quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm a sucker for space combat, so this is my folly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to agree with you, I think. I'm trying to just skim through it right now, but honestly, like, I liked the setting of when they're setting up building the machines. I liked them talking about how they were doing it. The orcs and the whole battle about this battle barge even just being used as bait. And I don't know. I think I liked all of this story. What about you, Paul?
I think anybody that puts themselves out there for this kind of stuff is awesome. I mean, this is something that, you know, takes thought to write, courage, you know, to send in, and then, you know, to have it be exposed and flayed on air, you know, in real time. I mean, this is the first time I've ever seen it, so these are all just, you know, raw thoughts. I like that it does. It captures that feel. I felt 40K-ish. You know, I was in the moment the entire time. And then we get down to the orc names, and he's like, and this is the powerful Orky McOrkerson. And I was like, okay.
Big smash.
Yeah. But that's not bad. I mean, that was the only thing I think that took, that was like 40K from the 90s and where the first of the story was like 40K from the 2000s. You know, that was, and so I had to, it made me just like sit there and think a second. It didn't take me out, you know, but
we've had entire short stories written in like orc speak that are like this long. It's just like, oh my God.
Yeah. But there is that comical aspect of orcs that sometimes it kind of just throws you for a little bit of a loop after talking about canticles and omnisia and macro cannons.
But I dig it. I think this is actually pretty damn good.
Oh yeah. It made me think of, there's a piece of art that I saw, I don't know how long ago, but it showed kind of like a cross section of a very large Imperium warship, and it showed loader crews loading these macro cannons, and it was like 400 individual people to load a single shell. And they're literally like, they had these chains and ropes and they're pulling this like entry back so that the shell could be loaded. And there were priests above them, like I'm assuming doing their canticles and just showering them in incense and the oils. And it just, I really got that vibe from this, which is the perfect 40K for me. So
if this was later found out that this was like a copy and paste from a White Dwarf article, I would believe it. I mean, that's how actually when you were reading it, I was like, on a scale of, you know, White Dwarf to Betrayer, where does this fall? And I was like, well, if that's still really good, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. It's definitely it's nice because it's also, like grammatically coherent. Jeez, which is really is nice. We don't, you know, it's not all the time that we get that, but it's nice.
I like it.
Well, yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks Redeemable Grace for sending that in. Obviously keep writing. I'm really curious if like you have a Skitarii force.
Sure.
On maybe from Jupiter that you say, or maybe you have an orc force.
You have those shadow wolves. Who knows?
Yeah, I'm curious. So if you want to get in touch with us and tell us a little bit more about the back of your story, that'd be really cool.
For sure.
But let's move on to the next one.
Okay, I'm going to read this one.
Because, is it short?
Yeah, but then I'm also going to read the final one to make up for
okay,
it.
Okay, all right.
So here we go. Here's some words for you guys. So this story is by Robert. Let's get into the mood here. Okay, Eric's lighting the candles in the background. We're good to go.
Just some incense right here for you, Mark.
I am lost in silence. What was a thunder of war and agony is warped out of my existence. The only thing that surrounds me is the dust and echoes of distant screams. I am alive. My heart thumps as I regain consciousness. Thump, thump, thump. As I feel my heart contract in my chest, I regain a sense of my surroundings. My lung fill with dust as I start to notice my breath. I cough. He didn't write that part, but he did cough. The only thing I observe in this direction, my eyes fixated before I went into chalk?
Shock?
Shock? Once again, just reading straight how it is. Straightforward. My mind is slowly processing the input from the ocular senses of my eyes. Do I dare even move? I witness the daunting miscalculation my superiors have made right before my eyes. I hear vox communications from nearby casters requesting imminent reinforcement. And that is the story.
So, Robert. It's very much reminds me of the cold open... like narrative development. Yeah. Sure. All you do is you wake up and I'm assuming it's like a shell-shocked person and they're in the middle of a battle.
Yeah, that's the impression I get too, yeah.
What's that Skyrim mean? Very beginning of Skyrim. You wake up.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, glad you're awake. Yeah. That's what I get out of this, so.
Yeah, I mean, I like that you can kind of, so you definitely get a sense of the individual and their senses, but I like that you can build the setting to whatever you want out of this. If you want them to be fighting chaos, like, that's what you can picture when this, what this person sees. You want them to be fighting orcs or Tyranids or Necron or some unknown force or anything really, or even just the planet itself if it's rising up against the them, who knows, but I kind of like that it's focused entirely on an individual's perspective of the horror of space war.
Sure. Space war.
Well, it's different. Space war is different than you know, Earth war. Less.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Well, then you got the demons. Is there a demon happening? I mean, I'm definitely much envisioning like a black and white web comic, you know, with this text here.
Yes. Yeah. Even just like all those little things, just little in frame by frame, you can kind of get like a little picture individual. It's kind of nice.
I like quick, short stories, you know? It's a win in my book. So let's place bets. Do we think this poor guardsman survives?
You think it's a guardsman?
It has to be. Who else?
They mentioned the Voxes. I think the Voxes is
yeah, and
you know what, that's fair.
To Imperium.
Daunting miscalculations of superiors. That's guardsmen if I ever did see it. What?
Space Marines also think their superiors make mistakes, Mark.
No.
Okay, so are we all set that this is a guardsman?
Yes.
All right.
Paul
No, definitely guardsman. I think okay. I was trying to peg it to which regiment is where I was going.
Oh.
I mean, ocular senses, so they have eyes, so we know.
Sure, all the eyeless regiments are out.
They're all out. They're off the list.
Yeah,
I'm saying Cadians because Cadians are the ones that would be most likely to question their superiors, because Catechin superiors are always right and would be right there with him or with this person.
That's true, yes.
Yeah, and Krieg definitely, you know, they would barely even say that they're alive. So.
There's not even a single mention of a shovel in
there. Yeah, no shovels in the story, so it's not Krieg.
Well, thank you, Robert, for sharing your story.
I like to think that this was a story that he built out of a game that he played. So imagine, if you will,
yes.
Imagine a squad of guardsmen told to bunker down and hold this point because, damn it, we need that point for some reason. And all of a sudden, a massive Moloch over the rise and with one big swipe just crushes the entire squad and sends Private
Jenkins
there. Yeah. Yep, that's the one. Mm-hmm. Sends him tumbling over, and this is him slowly waking up and realizing, no, I cannot fight this Tyranid Moloch.
Everyone in his squad that's left is requesting 100 more people.
That's right, yeah. Minimum. Oh, yeah. Well, thank you, Robert, for sending it in. It's kind of cool. Yeah, I liked it. Just a little taste.
Just a little teaser.
Yeah. Okay, and then next we have Paul. You're going to read one?
I wasn't planning on it.
What?
No.
With your radio voice? Come on.
I'll leave that to y'all.
Okay. Well, Eric, buckle down.
All right.
You got another one for you.
So the next one we have is from Tom. Don't run. We are not something to be terrified of. Perhaps it would be best to teach you about us, since that is how friends are made, and we already know you on such an intimate level. We are here to serve. In this angry existence, we are sure this is a comfort to you. We don't seek death or glory, just a chance to serve life. Our world is Antara Prime. As planets go, it appears remarkably average, capable of supporting life, but not overabundantly. No unique minerals or strange artifacts of great power. Sorry. The yellow sun Antara Prime orbits is somewhat younger than Terra's by 3.3 million years, but who's truly counting? Intara was colonized in the golden age of mankind at the height of humanity's galactic expansion. It was meant to be a garden of delight and technological advances. That is when we arrived here. We lived to serve and were given all manner of abilities to best help our planet's inhabitants, and we succeeded greatly. But in the course of time, a war of annihilation came. The loss of life was unparalleled. The surface of our average planet was turned to glass and sand. Oceans evaporated, and the ash falling everywhere was made for the former inhabitants of our fair world. Oh, sorry. Oceans evaporated, and the ash falling everywhere was made of the former inhabitants of our fair world. We were beside ourselves with grief. There was no one to serve, no garden, no advances, no purpose. In this dark time, being ever adaptable, we altered ourselves. If there was no one to serve, we would then serve ourselves until life returned to Intara Prime. We used the vast stores of knowledge deposited in the protective operating systems of Intara to enhance our way of life. Only a fraction of the systems survived the war, but we are particularly proud of our ability to reverse engineer and program while simultaneously performing menial tasks. We dug deep inside the planet and altered its core to be a source of bountiful energy. You will truly be surprised to see the extent of our planet's modifications. We have built massive deep core mines to gather resources, as well as powerful refineries and relativistic factories to make use of them. We developed humanoid robotic caretakers and have vast stores of them, ready to serve. Additionally, we began research laboratories and knowledge repositories that currently dwarf any in your detailed memory. Our vision was not only coreward. We sought to repair the biosphere. Life would once again thrive here on Intara. Gene labs and clone factories restored the fauna of our average planet, slowly. We are never in a rush. You may be asking why we did not repopulate the planet with our obviously advanced technology. Do not think we did not try. Every single attempt led to failure. Millions of attempts were made, leading to one conclusion. We could not replicate a soul. Cautiously, we ventured into the space surrounding Intara Prime. We were very careful there. We did not know who won the Great War and did not wish to be discovered. We developed the Quiet Web, a communication system undetectable by your best sensors to alert us of any signals from the galaxy. What we did learn was surprising and came to us in scattered bits, but most of that is your people's history. Not really worth going over. We both know much of it is a lie. So despite the state of the galaxy and the joyful knowledge of more beings to serve, we remained hidden, ever increasing our capabilities while storing information. We thought we were forgotten, content to be discovered one day before our star went supernova. The warp storms changed all of that. Even our quiet web could detect nothing outside the local system when the storms came. It was at this point we discovered the energies of what you call the Chaos Gods. They spoke to us. Not in a conversation, as you would call it, but more in a detection of wills. Do not worry. Frankly, we relate to Tzeentch and Slaanesh the most. Knowledge and perfection are prime directives for us. But ultimately, they do not serve anyone but themselves. So while some of us were affected by their machinations, we purged the taint of chaos from among us. And then, to our greatest joy, a ship of your people, the Adeptus Mechanicus, arrived in our system. You had unknowingly found us. When your explorers landed on our very average planet, we met them in the same way we met you. It was a match for the ages. We could not have hoped for a more ideal group of people to serve. You revere technology, and indeed augment your bodies with it. And you have souls. Each is unique and has a distinct fingerprint of beauty worth protecting. Your people figured out what to do with the soulless bodies we created. Servitors are very useful. Bravo. We know the expedition to Intara was exploratory, but we were such good servants, the mission became one of colonization. We barely insisted. And so we served, and you were served. Naturally, knowing our minds as good servants should, we did not allow knowledge of us to leave this system. But we delighted in becoming a Forge World. Our collaboration was one of complete integration. One such as yourself could barely tell where the Mechanicum ended and we began. Doesn't that make you feel good? It was during this time of becoming an average Forge World that we developed defensive capabilities for our new, dare we say it, friends. In all honesty, Mechanicum military technology is only a toy compared to the standard templates we have. We decided that to best serve you, we would only modify military items marginally. Nothing spectacular. No las cannons capable of scouring planets in the hands of your Skitarii, or bolters that store ammunition in a different dimensional state for export to the Imperium. No upgrades for weapons transported off-world, slight upgrades for weapons staying on Antara, and fully upgraded weapons for our Doomsday cache. Oh, the delight we feel at being able to protect you from almost anything. You're thinking of the terrors of the known galaxy now. Truly, very few of them are terrors to us. For example, we allowed the Orcoids to assault our world to remain average and hidden in plain sight. They pose no threat, but are always a good persistent cover for this average planet. Our favorite pastime with the Orcoids is linking them up to our neural virtual reality worlds and having them fight and overcome threats while analyzing their psionic and genetic memory. They have come up with such fun toys. The other biological threat, dubbed Tyranids, are similarly entertaining to us. They once tried to devour Antara. The gravitational fluxing event was unique, but not beyond what our planetary gravitational stabilizers could handle. Once the biological fleet entered our system, we quickly and quietly dispatched them with the Silver Surplus Armada. Note: the paltry amount of warships required by the Imperium for our Forge World is well below our actual production ability and far below our technology level. The Tyranid fleet fell to anarchy as soon as it came in range of the SSA's defenses. Why would these animals have such an easy off switch? After the Queen was scoured from existence, we cataloged and extracted specimens for study. In particular, the Gene Stealer is our favorite to analyze. Its desire to convert populations to accept the Tyranids matches our own desire to serve. The Tau are tiny in power, but fascinating from a service and technology standpoint. We long to connect to their drones and show them the greatest way to expand the greater good is through service. And what of the forces of chaos? We hear their gods calling out to us and trying in vain to subvert our goals. In response, we have begun developing ways to use the energies of the warp to power all manner of devices, from warships to solar rejuvenators. Thankfully, the armies of chaos have not come to this world. We are unsure what the best way to serve within the warp. It is not as quantitative as we would like, and causes computing errors that are unacceptable. Further study is needed. How best to serve the Eldari and all its factions? This we have pondered over millennia. They are a dying race. While it would be an expert show of our skills and prowess to save them, current scenario predictions indicate that we will never reach enough of them to repopulate their race. We suppose only their technology will survive them. A sad end to a venerable and beautiful culture, but one we can make use of. And now to the part you hope to hear in your mechanical heart. Our biggest fear, the Necron. Absolute terror. The thought of them slows us to a crawl. They dwarf us in their might. We continue to hide because of them. They would view us as servants, which you might think would please us. But serving them? They bend the materium to their will and would view us as fleas. We cannot stand up to them, and our solace is only being hidden in that they are not united in purpose as we are. They are the boogeymen of the galaxy. Fascinating, desired, and terrifying. Yet we are drawn to them all the same. And now, dear friend, we send you back to where you came from. Carry us with you in your heart and mind so that one day all of the living might be served by us. But for now, that cold feeling of your memory being stripped away and rewritten is us, keeping you safe and helping others to see nothing more than an average world in your reports. Now returning motor functionality to your legs.
Ooh, that was a banger. I really like that one. I still don't know what that race is. Human, I'm pretty sure. But so far from it, it seems. Like, they must have been lost in the dark age of technology, come up with their own things. Holy moly, my mind's racing.
Yeah, I like it that it kept that intensity the whole way through. Like, there's a tone to it that never wavered, which is nice.
I feel like I'm in a first-person video game, and the exposition of the story is being explained to me in that. That's a monologue, you know, is like I'm on like a table, an examining table, and someone's, you know, don't worry. It makes me think of Camino, first of all. And then as well, you know that moment when, I don't know why I'm doing all Star Wars right now, when Padme is getting born and that robot's like, ooh la, na la. It's like making like the soothing noises.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of how I pictured they would treat us, these aliens. Like, let us soothe you. It was very neat, though. I also got a human alien to begin with. But as the story progressed and went on, I more got the sense that they aren't human. Or if they are, they aren't able to make more humans. Because it all comes down to that line of we couldn't replicate a soul. But if you're a human, you can just do things with other humans and make more humans.
What things?
I don't want to get into it here, but if you don't know, then it's too late for you.
My wife won't tell me. I don't know.
But that was my weird turning point where I was like, oh, like, have these people left their humanity behind? Have they evolved into something greater? They talk about integration a lot. Their fear of the Necron is another.
Oh, yeah,
is
good.
Like, that's skin crawling, honestly, when I started reading it. Like, you can, everything to them is, you know, for cataloging and for witnessing and experimenting with, but even like just the Necron itself was just pure terror.
Yeah.
And I thought that was communicated really well.
Yeah.
Well, there's stuff, you know, going back to the beginning of time or whatever with the old ones and that kind of stuff. And there are all these races and factions and societies that existed then that don't exist now. And this, I get the idea that this is a relic from one of those periods, you know.
Okay. Heck,
maybe even like, I don't know if you remember those pictures from the old Rogue Trader books where Hell's has like a lineup of different species.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Maybe this is one of those, you know, that we don't know anything about.
Yeah. That's cool. I like that idea too. Cause yeah, they seem to be pretty ancient and constantly trying to hide themselves and always will. The only reason I lean towards human is just like the Admech met with them and they seem to be okay. So they have to be like,
that's
human
true.
Enough that the Admech would deal with them.
Oh,
but
yeah,
who knows, maybe they're putting on a disguise. Like they seem to be masters of technology. It might just be a human skin sack they're wearing. You know, who knows?
Just a flesh sack.
Just a little flesh sack. So
yeah, that's a good point.
They trank darted the whole ship. And then you gave him these memories. And...
You like know it. What? That's also a very real possibility.
Jeez.
Yeah, because obviously they have the ability to even manipulate memories because they're talking about how they're doing it to this guy alone. So maybe you're right. Maybe they just took the entire ship and they're manipulating everything.
That's nice. I like it.
Yeah, they're scared of the Necrons because the Necrons did. I mean, they warped, you know, the Necron tier or whatever, but they fought gods and the remnants, you know, they could be witnesses to the whatever the war in between the heavens was.
Yeah. Oh,
and that's truly why they're afraid of the Necron so much.
And they've been hiding for 60 Ooh. Million years from them.
I like it. Jeez.
Yeah, this was a pretty neat one. It has that like weird, almost like thriller type feel to the first part where you're like, this is too good. Like what's hidden? What's like behind all this?
It's like the mask is about to slide off just to reveal like a bloody face or something, you know?
Yeah. They're talking to you and all of a sudden like the mouth stops like moving, but the voice still keeps going. And you're like, wait a minute, what's happening? But I do like that it throws it back into that horror aspect right at the very end, you know, like, let me change your memories because you can't truly remember what happened here, and, you know, we'll fix you. And but I really like that. I think this is pretty well written.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's I know it's kind of on the nose, but it's got a kind of clinical feel to it. Like I hear people that, you know, when they're getting an IV or something, you know, first you feel that cold going into you, and then you feel whatever's next. And I feel like there's that, you know, that cold is going in you, and we don't know what happens next, but it's probably bad. Or,
but it's probably bad.
Yeah. Wow. For like the first half of the story, I just had this image. It was nice. Like, it was just two humans walking, one ad mech and this guy talking about his world and stuff. And yeah, it just slowly changes, and eventually it just gets dark.
Yeah.
I like it. Cool. I like it.
It was very well written. Thank you to, what was his name?
Let's go with Robert.
Robert? I think it was Robert. Tom. Dang it. We weren't even close. Tom, thank you for writing and sending that in. That was awesome.
Yeah, and if you have what this
race is. What is the race?
Let us know. Or if you just wrote this and you don't even know, that's cool too. But either way, you have to let us know.
Yeah, or you can just hold it over us and say we'll never learn.
I have people. Part of my Spotify deal is I have access to Hitman now.
That's not true.
It's true. So but either you share or...
The truth is that Tom has already told you, but then he's wiped your memory.
Oh, God, no. Oh,
it's happened to us.
No. Wait, I'm the guy in the story?
You might be. Yeah. And now feeling is returning to your legs, and you can get the rest of your life.
Very, very cool.
Any other thoughts?
Keep it up.
Yeah, I agree with Paul. That was awesome. Tom should just keep writing.
Yep.
Oof. Okay, and we have one more story.
Sure.
That Mark is going to read.
Oh, I was hoping you wouldn't say that.
Well.
Okay, so.
I'm really excited to hear this.
Okay, here we go. So this is by David. Pre-lore note. All of this has been determined by an Only War RPG campaign and is subject to change at any time. But as for now, it has influenced the making of an Imperial Guard regiment. Administorum record Theta Pi Epsilon 611-8549-000. You get the point. There's 50 numbers here.
We're Gamma. Reading this. Oh, we're okay. Reading this. It's 00000000294752270759871019958584074 gamma.
You've got dashes, but
dang it, I did.
Okay, well, since you're reading, carry on.
He got me. All right, here we go. Verusia. Once a world of fire and ash, it met a cataclysmic fate when the Cicatrix Maledictum opened throughout the galaxy. Picture a world that was once like Terra, but still in its proto-planetary form. Great geysers of lava and fire spewed into the skies, and toxic fumes drifted in clouds over the landscapes. Mountain ranges came and went with the decades, as the plate tectonics of the world were so strong. Vast continents themselves disappeared over time, leading to the inhabitants living in vast floating hives, suspended by the powerful planetary magnetic field and gravitic technologies lost to the Age of Strife. Each hive had void shields to match that of a Titan's, and the radiation shielding of a void ship. Power for these massive machines was drawn from geothermal interactions with the planet. Due to all of this, the planet had a significant populace of tech priests of the Adeptus Mechanicus to both maintain and study the ancient technologies. They discovered that each city was capable of ejecting a segment into the surrounding void shields, vaporizing it instantly. Basically, picture a bunch of cities floating in the air, linked by rail, walkways, transport tubes, and various support pylons. I think of them as simply as a bunch of linked circles around a massive circular core. Each was supposed to have been able to be towed, but when the planet was sucked into the warp, not one of the cities was able to be taken off planet, leading to the death of over 6 billion citizens. The world is now gone forever, disappearing from the segmentum obscurus permanently. The Verusian 32nd, also known as the Hellbreakers, are the last regiment of the world of Verusia. They were to be deployed to Dalfur's Cistern, a world in the Ghoul Stars, when they were swept away by the Cicatrix Maledictum and carried through time and space to the world of Hestia's Furnace, a flaming ball of lava and stone. They were forced to crash land their vast trooper carrier into the planet's sixth largest continent. Here they sustained heavy losses to an orc war, losing almost two-thirds of their initial fighting strength. Luckily, the remnants of a chapter of Space Marines was nearby and saw their spectacular arrival from the Immaterium, but was initially unable to contact the survivors. Finally, Engine Seer Pastian Venn of the 22nd Squad managed to get a signal to the nearby Space Marine battle barge, which had been sending signals for days looking for survivors. The Space Marines identified themselves as the remnants of the Ultima Scions chapter, and they immediately sent several squads to help evacuate the guardsmen, now numbering in the 200s. More and more guardsmen fell that day, leaving only a company's worth of these infantrymen. Not even a company's worth of Space Marines remained. Since then, the 32nd has fought alongside the Scions, absorbing recruits from any world they pass by, trying to keep their strength up.
Okay.
Having a bad day right there.
Yeah.
Sounds like a bad year. This is their 2020.
I just right away think I just want to see the models that you've made. Like, I'm very curious if you've done conversions or if they're just straight Cadians.
Of the Verusian?
Yeah.
That's still like 1,500 points. That'd be all right.
Yeah, a full company of guys and some Space Marines.
Yeah, should be fine.
So they come from a planet which was in constant chaos,
apparently.
And then to top it all off, they got sucked into the warp.
This is very 40K to me. I mean, so, you know, you don't get to choose the planet you grow up on. And in the horrors of, I mean, it's space travel, but not everyone can just leave. So yeah. You're just eventually going to get consumed by whatever, you know, warp fissure you're living next to.
Wow, it's not bleak at all.
I mean, they're lucky they weren't eaten actually by demons first. I mean, so I got that going for them.
That's all right.
Well, you know, at least they didn't have to wait to starve.
Yeah.
That's my...
Yeah.
But yeah, I like the whole... what's the author's name? David. Okay, David creates this picture of, like, this crazy planet that's in chaos with these massive cities.
Floating hive cities.
Yeah, ooh. Floating hive cities with tunnels and rails and things connecting them and pylons making sure they stay in the air and... That's very, very cool.
Yeah, it's a shame that planet gets fucked.
Wow.
By the looks of it.
It's not...
And all... How many?
Six billion
citizens die? Because, yeah, that's such a cool image, like those floating hive cities. And, yeah, I love it.
Yeah. Cool. And the ability to be towed around, which is... I like that because it doesn't play into the story at all, but you just add a little bit on to, like, what your story is.
Yeah.
So.
You get an idea of what their life was like, and then, you know, what's... Like, why it's even worse that their story is almost over because there's only a handful of them left. I
mean. Yeah, very true. So I'm assuming that the Verusian 32 weren't on planet at the time.
No,
right?
No, they said
they were sent deployed to Dalfour's sister.
Yeah,
and then they also happened to be caught in the Cicatrix Maledictum.
Hmm.
So maybe then maybe everyone on the planet was just cursed.
Oh, yeah.
You know, everyone was, like, fated to be drawn into the Cicatrix. It just so happened that people on the ship survived, mostly, kind of, and no one on the planet did.
Mostly kind of,
Yeah, I like it. You can really tell that, like, this was built out of an ongoing story that happened. There's very key things that,
yeah.
You know, the Space Marines were there, but they couldn't get in contact with you, and then at some point they ended up making contact. And
yeah, you can just imagine them playing the game, trying to figure out how actually.
Yeah, how do we?
Yeah, that's a whole session of.
Yeah, exactly.
How absolutely. Do we get the ship in the right spot to make sure that our signal bounces off this moon to hit this Space Marine vessel or whatever?
Can I just roll for luck, please?
Yeah.
Well, that's what the planet did, and they did not.
Oh, it failed miserably. Yeah, I really like that, though, because it kind of speaks to the story not being how you might intend to write it.
Sure.
You know, you're kind of at the whim and the mercy of whoever's playing the game with you or whatever the dice say, because, you know, it's one thing to create the story into what you think is cool, and it's another to kind of have to progress with other people through this story.
I think that's Mark cool. If Mark hadn't rolled that one, then the planet would still be fine.
Yeah. Mark, it's all on you.
6 billion citizens. Brutal.
Yeah, but obviously, like, the 32nd is really cool. They're called the Hellbreakers, which it's very much in keeping in theme with their chaos planet that they came from.
There have been plenty of good, like, stories that have come out of Game Worlds. I mean, I don't know how much of this is myth or not or whatever, but I think, like, most of the Forgotten Realms has come out of gaming sessions, you know, people playing something. Many, many good book series, I think, have come about of people doing that type of narrative game, you know, with their friends and just taking it from there.
Yeah, even I have a whole army where we did a Tau RPG and we played for 50 hours and I did my Tau backstory on that and built an army. So, yeah, people do it all the time. And I love it because, like Eric was saying, you don't have control of where it's going and you just hope it works out in the end, you know?
Yeah, I really like that aspect of building something with other people, I think, is a really cool thing because they obviously bring a completely different perspective or like direction than what you wanted, but it just turns into this much more realistic representation, I think, of a story because, you know, things in life don't happen like a story. It's way more, feels more real for sure.
Yeah. Have you ever gotten to doing, like, role-playing games, Paul?
I have, yeah. I mean, that's much of my youth was doing that kind of stuff. I've written, too. I've written things, yeah, with the same thing, either original stuff or based off a game. Or I've even, like, back in the early days of Games Workshop tournaments where, you know, they were run GW grand tournaments and whatever, part of what your score was, you know, like your theme or your narrative or whatever. So I wrote a one-page story to, you know, each time I go to a tournament, hand that over when I handed them.
You better have it on you right now.
Really?
Well, I don't have it on me, at least not right now. But it was, same thing. It was about a character named Merfestus. And how
a Blood Angels guy, yeah.
Yeah, it was a Blood Angel story about how a drop pod lands and he gets out of the drop pod. He sees his sergeant blown up by, you know, some projectile or whatever, and he picks up his power axe, and when he does, he starts hearing, you know, shouts for Horus, like, where's Horus? And so the one pager is about him succumbing to the Black Rage, and I thought I was being, like, super clever you know, towards the end of it, to where the camera then, and this actually came up in one of these stories we just read or whatever, where the camera is focused in one area, and then it shifts to a little bit of another focus. And that's the same thing I did in mine, is like the survivors are going off planet. And then we still see our main character, Merfestus, chopping away at the, you know, what's left. You know, because he's consumed by the rage.
Sure, yeah, he has no choice.
They just leave him there. Wow. I love it.
Yeah, I think, like, adding those little backstories and even just one pagers, or the one guy who had, like, the 10 line story. Yeah. I think adding those to your armies and to your games just really elevate the playing experience.
Yeah, especially when you force it on your opponent to read it before the game, you know, at gunpoint, naturally.
Read this 200-page book.
Yeah, I need you to read this. Make sure you give him my 1 point, and let's move on.
There will be a test.
Merfestus is now a chaplain, by the way. Somehow he made it off planet and is now a chaplain.
I think what happened is you just signed up for a listener lore to do it again with us, but you have to read that.
Right, yeah.
You have to, so.
I will find it.
Okay, perfect.
That's what we like to hear. Well, before we kick off then, is there anything else you want to share?
Yeah, let's talk about what you're up to, Paul. Because, okay, like, yeah. You're doing quite a bit of awesome stuff in the community. And, like, yeah, you're one of the big names in the podcast community. So tell us more about what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, the show that I run, in the long format show, is called Forge the Narrative. You can find that on any podcast aggregators or on forgethenarrative.net. I post my hobby work in progress shots on Twitter at warmaster_TPM. And I'm on Instagram at Fights with Dice. Don't ask me why. I know they're all different, but I was trying to be clever each time. But I post different things on each of that stuff. So, you know, if you're on either one of those things, you might see something cool. You know, maybe check it out. And then I do a host shift on a show called 40K Today, which is a daily podcast, a short form 15-minute podcast, bringing kind of like fresh, up to the minute news, views, and interviews is what we say over there.
Yeah.
With a team of really awesome people. And I got awesome people on Forge Narrative too. We're a truly international cast. Got some it's a mix between competitive play, reviews for new things, and then just general theme and play. Like, and we also do a hobby segment, have a finishing moves hobby segment where we talk about maybe how to spend 5 extra minutes on your miniature and get a much cooler like effect from it.
Man, it's just so weird talking to you, because I love that finishing move section, like just talking about, oh yeah, you could just add this little bit to the eye lens here and it just makes the whole model pop. And now it's like hearing you talk about
thanks, man. I mean, that means a lot. This is my hobby journey, and I'm using the air quotes you can't see on radio, but I have zero natural talent when it comes to painting, like just not, but I've learned, you know, so we've got the products are better. The tutorials, you know, from people that are great are out there and it's accessible. The White Dwarf is accessible. But some of the stuff is attainable. Like you don't have to know your way around, you know, like how every aspect of the paintbrush or whatever, but you can just do these things. I mean, really 5 extra minutes to really get, I mean, you could spruce up a sergeant and feel better. And then sooner or later you're then doing 5 figures and then you're doing the whole squad. And then, you know, then you get stuff you're proud of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think painting, like it's so different than painting on a canvas. Like when you're painting with the miniature, you can just take advantage of all the miniatures, like curves and edges and all that. Like, if you know the technique on how to do it, it's really quite easy to paint 40K miniatures. I think anyone could do it if you watch those YouTube videos.
Well,
I'm serious.
Don't look at me, Mark.
The judgment. I think anyone could do it. But I've mentioned this on my show again, is it's all about, there's no hobby shaming at all. Like, you know, comparison is the death of happiness. You know, you've got to find ways to make yourself happy with what you're doing. And we just try to make it a little bit more accessible, you know, and it's coming from, you know, tournament players, you know, so you do, who are not known for their hobby prowess. I'll tell you that, you know, there's a perception out there. But what I tell folks is that, you know, what you put on the table is a way to, you know, before you even say one word, you're communicating your respect for the hobby and the game itself to your opponent, or, you know, to a player that you may encounter even in a game store, not even in a competition setting.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I've vowed to myself that I won't play with my own unpainted miniatures anymore, because it is a respect thing. Like I'll play against other people's unfinished plastic, but for me, I want to have the best experience for me and for the other person. So part of that is painting the miniatures. So,
I'm sorry, not trying to go off on everything I'm doing, but we just did a charity stream for the Nova Open Charitable Foundation with Adam Camilleri, Joshua Diffie from Best Ghost Pairings behind the scenes. We had our man Red Powell, who's on the show, in the chat, you know, and so we're kind of all over the place doing some cool things, and so hopefully folks can check us out.
Yeah, for sure. Do you help in Nova Open too, or are you just doing that charity event?
Charity event. So okay. I mean, I'm kind of a fixture at a lot of the big tournaments and stuff, because I like to go and play and hang out. It's another thing. You see people, you see the same folks. That's one of the things I hope we get back to eventually, is of the tournament players, you know, you start to encounter the same people from place to place. And the question I get a lot is, you know, is it worth going to these things, you know, if you've never been or don't know what to expect? I think the answer is absolutely yes. because you do, you have that instant connection with people. You have a lot more in common with folks than you might expect. And, you know, and you get to live it out. You get to do this nerd thing that we obviously love it. I mean, look, we're an hour deep into a podcast talking about fanfic and, you know, and painting toy soldiers. Like, yeah, we all love it. We're here. We're all here together. And so that's just another natural extension. You know, I mean, reaching out, like people sending their stories or comments on YouTube or whatever. It's just do it. Get out there and engage.
Yeah, I think like one of the best pieces of advice you could I would probably ever give anyone is just whatever it is out there in 40K, just be involved. Because I don't know, like if you won't get involved like with what's around you, I think like you just burn out really fast. And 40K, I think, is meant to be shared.
Oh, yes.
With other people.
Yeah.
And I think that the like the only way you're really going to get the entire benefit out of 40K is making sure you're sharing your hobby with other people and
crushing your opponents on tabletop.
What? Yeah. And hearing the lamentations
of the women and the children. Yes. Yeah.
But no, even just going to there's a couple tournaments and I've never played tourneys. I'm not good enough for that stuff, but I do like to just go hang out and see the armies and look at the tables and kind of just be like another 40K nerd in a group of 40K nerds.
Mm-hmm,
and you totally is like, it can be a very like welcoming experience just to be like, hey, you like this? I do too. Like, how cool is that? You know, we don't have to have any kind of, like contextual friendship beyond the fact that both of us just really are into 40K. So,
well, most people love to talk about their hobby, right? So how did you get that blue on that Ultramarine? They're gonna tell you. They're gonna be happy to tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, everyone loves to share like what they're passionate about. So
yeah, I think all of us have had this conversation too, where you meet a new coworker or whatever, and you're hanging out with them, kind of working, and then eventually one of you is like, hey, have you ever heard of 40K? And then both of them beam up, and you're like, yes! And now they're your best friend, you know? I think we've all kind of had those types of situations.
Textbook story.
Yeah. And it's always phrased the same way. Hey, have you ever heard of Warhammer 40K?
there's that slight hesitancy.
But tournaments and stuff, you don't have to hesitate. You just dive right in.
Mm-hmm.
But so at Forge Narrative, we focus a little bit on like the competition aspect of it, but we get a lot of people write in and ask, you know, how to make whatever faction that they care about work. You know, they don't want to win 100% of their games. They just want to be, you know, somewhat functional on the table.
Yeah.
And the folks like, Red and Adam are amazing at making those, you know, what we might consider the B tier and C tier codexes or list really work and be functional on the table. And so we do a lot of talking about that kind of stuff.
It's kind of funny. Mark has a saying that he said for many a year now.
Oh yes.
And it's that, oh crap. I'm going to say it wrong.
Viable.
There we go. That's it.
You can make any army work. You just got to use it right. And maybe have a little luck too. That helps for sure.
Hey, rolling sixes never hurts, you know.
Never hurts.
But it kind of just speaks to the fact that people can be too focused on what might be the strongest or like best cost-effective unit. And I think a lot of it, like for me, definitely, the best enjoyment is just coming out of like, what did I have fun with today? You know, maybe I want to play with a unit I haven't played with in a long time.
What was my all-star unit that did something crazy I didn't expect?
Yeah, you know, absolutely. I think that's a way more beneficial for me focus than just trying to be like, all right, if I'm playing Necron, I'm only bringing destroyers. You know, so.
Well, I mean, my philosophy, I mean, as part of this, I mean, this is maybe not true for everyone, but I think for most of us that we spend way more time like building our models, putting our models together. Some of us don't paint as much as we should. I know there's been a lot of judgment on the show, but we spend a lot more time, you know, in the presence and thinking about our models and what they're going to do than we actually do playing, you know? So you should be playing with things that you like.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we get tons of questions. It's like, like what army should I start playing? It's like, man, that's a personal question. Like, what do you like?
Yeah, the number of times the email instantly goes to, hey, like I'm thinking of starting an army and I've heard this is really good.
Yeah.
And you instantly just it's so much better to turn the conversation away from that and into like, what do you like? You know, what are you going to be passionate about even when those rules aren't good? So
very, very true.
Yeah, I think that's it. So, Paul, thank you. If you have anything else, now's the time to say.
Oh, thank you all for having me. I really appreciated it. I mean, if you made it this far and you don't listen to our show, maybe check it out. And,
yeah, definitely, for sure. Go check them out. Like I said, I love that show. The only reason I stopped listening to it was, you know, just didn't like that Paul that very much.
Well, see, I've solved that. I've just come over here. That way you can't get away.
Infiltrated.
It's a great show. Definitely go check out Forged Narrative. And the other one you do, it's 40K
Today. Yeah, it's a really fun show and a fun group. It's a bit of a montage cast, but it's all great people with a lot of enthusiasm for the hobby. Awesome. And yeah, it's neat. It's real neat.
Yeah, and like you said, just 15 minutes, which is nice, because that's sometimes all people have in a day anyways for podcasts. So that's perfect. I love it.
Yeah, it's just that little hit in your vein that you really needed for anyways. Thank you so much, Paul, for joining us.
That was awesome.
Thank you to all of the people who submitted to their stories to us. We are working on your content. We will be getting it out to you. It's just a matter of time, so have patience.
Yeah. So if you have a story you want to send to us, send it to lorehammerpodcast@gmail.com or just message us on Instagram. Whatever. Yeah, we'll hook you up.
We'll point you in the right direction.
But remember to try to keep your stories no longer than 10 minutes read time. And you know what? Spell checking exists. It's a thing. Check it out. But yeah, thanks for submitting. Paul, thanks again. Listeners, I guess. And, thank you. Eric, thank you.
You're welcome. And we'll see you next time, guys.
Have a great night.
Bye.